The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton, you're with us for the next 30 minutes, a frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addiction. Joining me, Dan Trelaro, who still travels the country talking to young people on college campuses about the potential dangers of gambling. Danny, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Happy to have from Long Island Scott with us as well. Scott is also a gambler in recovery, as Dan and I are. Scott, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Craig. Good morning, Dan. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So when's the last time you wagered?
Last time I wagered was July 12, 2013.
Wow, so more than a decade of recovery. Congratulations on that. That's amazing.
Thank you so much. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, you should be. Let's tell your story a little bit. When you look back on your life, do you remember the first time that you were exposed to the world of gambling, you know, long before it ever became a problem?
Well, I think a lot of in commonality to a lot of other individuals, you know, young childhood gambling became like something was of the norm in my life and my family, you know, learning how to play blackjack from dad when I was seven, betting on a local neighborhood sporting event, scratch offs at the holiday dinner table, going to bingo, at the church bingo, and, working the coffee cart and watching, all these people play bingo and celebrate wins. I think gambling was really normalized well back into my young childhood.
So you were exposed to it. When did you start doing it?
I started gambling probably when I was 10. We used to have card games with friends, dealer's choice. We would bet, you know, nickel, dime, quarters going back to that age. And you know, to be quite honest, it was just an event that brought us together and we had a blast.
Right.
You know, but that was my earliest recollection. But I talk about that bingo event because I think back to the time I was pushing that cart, delivering coffees, and I was given the opportunity to sit down and play the final game of bingo. And I actually won the jackpot. Now, I'm not really sure they should have been paying me out, but I won $100 when I was like 11 years old.
Wow.
It was incredible.
And did that make you want to go play a lot more bingo?
It really did not. I have to say that gambling was fun. I didn't want to go back. I never had the, like, I can't remember having the obsession to gamble. I had the obsession to be part of something, you know, and that was the friend groups and whatnot.
So, Danny, let me let you jump in on here. Two things for you. One, it seems like that's the norm, that gambling was safe and fun and recreational, or, you know, early on in our lives. And two, we viewed gambling as a way to socially connect and be a part of a crew of guys or gals, a group of people that had other things in common.
And that's how it starts off a lot of times. You know, the two of the biggest predictors of potentially developing a problematic relationship is age of onset, right, starting early, and not seeing the negatives. And, you know, when we talk about being 11, 10, 11, 12 years old, you know, the value of a dollar to an 11-year-old or 12-year-old is a lot different, right? There's no bills. There's no car payments. And so when you win a little money or you spend time with family and friends, you know, it holds a lot of weight. And the positives outweigh the negatives. And it's innocent fun, right? And that's what it seems like at the time. But then as life starts to unfold, we put that fun feeling in our pocket of life. And as we're going through life, things start to happen. The question is then, based on what's happening, do we go back to gambling as a way to cope with our problems, as a way to alleviate stress? And I think that's what Scott will probably talk about in a little bit, because that's where it becomes problematic for the three of us, is as life unfolds, we see gambling as that thing that made us feel better, or we can get a rush or a high.
Well, it's like anything else. I remember being friends with a really great athlete as kids, and when things were problematic at home for him with his parents going through a bad divorce, he went out to the basketball court because that's where he felt comfortable. That's where he felt good about, you know, himself. And it kind of acted like a cocoon from life's problems. And for guys like us, gambling was always associated with good things and positive things and friends and family. So I get that. Scott, for you, looking back on your life with clarity now, when did you begin, for lack of a better word, you know, the spiral of compulsive gambling? Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely do, Craig. But I want to just bring up the point, you know, I got into young adulthood and, you know, I started going to casinos. Casino trips were preempted by friends going to have dinner, to have fun, you know, have a few drinks, do a little dancing, and a little bit of gambling at the end. But it was all a social event from early on, young adult, all the way up to I was aged about 32. It was fun. It was entertainment. It was our form of bonding as friends and being together. And there was really very little or no harm in going. At age 32, things completely changed. My trips to the casinos were by myself. I wanted to go gamble by myself. It increased rapidly. And what really was the turning point for me was that I received a little disc in the mail. I might be dating myself right now, but I received a disc in the mail that gave me access to the world of international casino gambling online, on my computer, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And I went down a rabbit hole that just kept for 13 or 14 years, brought me to places I never thought I could possibly get to. The devastation was horrendous. It was all the time. So I always associate going to casinos, like there had to be an end. You know, while the devastation was happening, you either had to leave because you had to get home for something, or you had to leave because you ran out of money. You know, occasionally you got lucky, you had to leave and you had money, but that didn't happen quite often.
So
but that online access.
So you were spending, so the physical visits to the casino were what they should be, social fun, couple drinks, maybe you win a couple bucks, lose a couple bucks, but it was really the online access that started you down the really bad path, yeah?
So that started me really down the really bad path, but the casino visits became socially isolated. I wanted to be by myself there. I didn't, you know, up to the age of 32, it was that social activity. After 32, I didn't want anybody near me, not my friends, not my wife. I mean, they would come with me to the casino, but I would quickly separate myself, go into my cocoon, and want to be alone.
Give me an idea when that was going on. Walk us through, like at the height of the gambling problem, walk me through what a normal day of gambling might look like for you.
Here's a normal day of gambling for me. I'd wake up in the morning, take a shower, put my suit on, kiss my beautiful bride goodbye and my kid, go to my office, say hello to my staff, sit down in my office, close the door, and start gambling. Gamble all day long, not paying attention to what work requirements were there. I had my own accounting firm, so I was able to do that. I would come home, have dinner, go to kids' games, do whatever, you know, and tell my wife I had to do some work at you know, in my office downstairs. Go downstairs, open the computer, and gamble through the night. That was my life.
So you really became a prisoner to that computer screen more than anything else.
Craig, that is a wonderful statement.
I remember that.
Horrifying.
You know, I just think about that online gambling and the way you're describing it. I was a prisoner to it. It's like tied to the chair, tied to the laptop, tied to the technology. And every time I tried to get away, when I was living up in Bergen County, one of my friends drove down the street. I was outside cutting the grass on a Saturday morning. I was running up and down the lawn with the lawnmower just so I could get back to the computer faster and get my bets in for college football and get back to playing blackjack. I mean, it was literal insanity because it felt like a magnet constantly pulling me back there.
Let's take a break. I want to hear how things went really south for Scott, and then you have the story of recovery here as well. You are listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig, talking to Scott and, of course, Dan Trillaro. Scott, when we went to the break, you were talking about being a prisoner to the computer screen for online gambling, meaning you're gambling virtually every waking minute of the day. There had to be, at some level, some financial issues that came your way, right?
Craig, the financial devastation was insurmountable. It was building. I was juggling. I was refinancing a house. I was taking from my future. I was taking from future earnings. I was borrowing from anybody who trusted me. I was making up stories to get money. And, you know, ultimately, you know, there's other things that happened that I'm, you know, very open to talk about, but it disgusts me over talking about it. But, mm-hmm. you know, the financial devastation was so bad. But, you know, what's really, really worse is the amount of time and effort I put into gambling and the amount of time and effort I put into covering up what I was doing and hiding it from my wife for 14 years. I would create statements to show her that we were doing fine. Meanwhile, we couldn't pay the mortgage. I was taking from my business partner. I was doing everything possibly to keep chasing that big win to make it all right, make it all better, to fix it. I became trapped in myself. I was terrified. Terrified. I didn't know who I was anymore.
Pardon the pun, it becomes a house of cards. It's going to collapse, you know, at some point, obviously. Prior to the collapse, was there any moment where your wife or a buddy, a loved one, a family member came to you and said, man, you're not yourself. There's something going on. Like, open up, talk to me. Did that ever happen?
Craig, it did. I had five kids and running a business, and we chalked it up to the stresses of both those things.
Sure.
I was, you know, exhausted. I had high anxiety. You know, my wife knew I gambled. She had no idea the extent of what I was doing, how I was devastating our world. Like I said, I went to great lengths to cover that up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she did come to me. I promised that I'd stop. I stopped gambling 30 times. I swore I would never, ever do it again. Never go back. Stop for a week. Fix what I thought was the problem, which is money. So either, you know, I was able to get back to work, generate some revenue, have some money, get back to gambling. It was such a painful period of time. I was empty. I was a shell of a person. I missed so much during those years. It's upsetting. While I was there and present in every aspect of my life, mm-hmm. I wasn't there.
Right. You were there physically. You weren't there emotionally.
Correct.
What was the bottom of the barrel moment, if you don't mind sharing with us, that made you, you know, decide for real that you needed help and you're willing to get help and willing to commit yourself to trying not to gamble? What happened?
Sadly, the event that caused me to stop gambling completely and begin my life again was I was arrested in 2013 for acts clearly associated with this gambling addiction. And I was prosecuted and, you know, pled out and was sentenced to many years in prison. That was the starting point. That was the time where I had bars in front of me, but I was free. I began the journey of freedom.
Yeah. Wow. How much time did you serve?
Well, Craig, I was sentenced to 4.5 to 13.5 years. I served 2 in a New York State institution and 2 on work release. And I am 100% and 1 year post, 100% free from that world.
Yeah.
It was horrifying. I can't explain. I mean, I know we have that commonality, but we know it's not a place anybody should go ever.
No, it's inhumane.
This addiction can lead you there.
Yeah. No, look, you did time. I did time. Danny did time as well. I think it's powerful that the three of us and many others are open about it. We don't glorify it because it's not worth glorifying. It's disgusting. It is an inhumane life, being behind bars. I don't care what level you're at. It is inhumane. And sadly, and you know, to the average person listening to this, I know it's shocking. That's what it took for you to get on the right path. And I would make the argument, having never met you, that if your world did not blow up in the manner that it did, you might not be here today.
You are 100% correct. This addiction led me to attempt suicide 4 times.
Wow.
100%. There is no possible way I could have survived.
Can I ask you a question? I don't mean to pry on that, but we don't talk about mental health enough or suicide, in my opinion, enough, which is why I recommend people download the app HeyY. It's an app where if you're feeling, you know, some kind of way or having suicidal thoughts, it's a community-based, you know, kind of reach out help group, and I'm a big proponent of it. It's called HEYY. It's an app. You can download it for free. When you failed in those attempts, did you wake up happy that you failed, or did that send you into a new kind of depressive cycle?
I spent about 4 years of the end of my journey with gambling addiction, praying every night that it wouldn't wake up in the next morning. Wow. So when I couldn't actually complete suicide, I wasn't happy. I was happy that I didn't, because it would have been the most selfish thing I could have done to my family.
Right.
But I wasn't happy because it was still there. All my challenges were still in front of me, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to deal with it. It was really a sad moment, sad moments of my life, but I'm happy to be here today.
Sure.
It's a wonderful life. I work for a lot. I've been given opportunities that I never thought I would ever be given in my life again. I work for a large mental health organization. I'm a manager in the peer division. I am a certified recovery peer advocate in the state of New York. I provide one-on-one counseling for individuals that are struggling and navigating the challenges in gambling addiction with the New York Council of Problem Gambling. I have my beautiful wife chose in 2013 to learn about this addiction. Mm-hmm. And the words that really resonate with me is, she said to me, if you got cancer, I wouldn't run out on you. We're going to fight. And together we have fought. And we have restored our relationship. We have restored our life. We are now proud grandparents to two grandchildren and one on the way. I was able to walk two of my daughters down the aisle so far. The world without problem gambling is beautiful.
And what's the relationship like with your children? Because I imagine they were obviously younger, much younger, when you went through all this. And, you know, they probably have an interesting perspective. Are you comfortable talking with them about it? And, you know, how is that relationship?
My five children range from age 31 down to 21. Now, my youngest was 11 when I was taken away and sent to prison. Right. It was horrifying. I am open with them. I talk to them about it. They're very cognizant of addiction. They are my biggest, next to my wife, they are my biggest supporters. They encourage me to get out there and talk to people and be an advocate for change. And that's what I do. And I hope I'm making them proud.
No, you are for
sure.
They
watch the Superman.
Yeah, look, it's funny you use the term Superman. I wrote a letter. I don't know why I wrote it, and I never gave it to anybody, in which I described my relationship with my kids as, you know, Superman forgot how to fly. It was the best way I could describe how I failed them when I was selfishly gambling and, you know, treating gambling more important than them, you know, or my wife or anyone else in my life. So it's interesting that you use that term. Dan, I want to bring you back in here because, you know, you did time as well, and you've dedicated your life post-prison to doing what Scott's doing, which is paying it forward and using the worst, you know, time in your life to make the world a better place. And I wonder if you could just speak to that.
You know, the work that I do, I'm so thankful because, Scott, like you, you know, we're in the field. We want to help prevent people from going down the path we went. And if they do start to go down the path, just kind of educate, provide preventative tools, some strategies, some tools in their tool belt. Because we see gambling like other people don't, right? The three of us see it from a different lens and through a different lens. And we know the potential for harm and we see this slow train that's just kind of coming down the path, and it's just been coming down now for years, you know, it helps keep me on the right path. You know, I'm thankful. I speak all around the country in front of all different groups of people. And even just last night, I was at a young men's youth group at the church that I worship at. 30 guys in the ages of 21 to 35, 18 of the 30 guys gamble, and about 9 of them think they have a problematic relationship after just kind of talking. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, people are just walking around, you know, not understanding what it looks like, what it feels like, and that's why we do the work we do on this podcast and other work that we all do collectively to heighten awareness, to reduce stigma and shame, because there's so much shame.
Yeah, we all feel that, but I know I got to end this here, and Scott, I could talk to you for another hour easily. I just want to end it with one question for you, and that is, having, you know, tried to take your life multiple times and now having this amazing life worth living, there are a lot of people that are at step one of this process that were where you were 10 years ago. For me, 6 years. Danny, I think, is going on 14 years now of recovery without gambling at all. And there is that feeling of the walls caving in, and I'd be better off not waking up tomorrow. And I wonder what you say to those people that are dealing with those emotions and step one of recovery. How do you counsel them, and what do you say to them?
That is a wonderful thing that I used to say, just pick up the phone and call someone. But this is what I say now. Stand in front of the mirror, look at yourself, put your ego aside, start telling yourself the truth. This is a disease. This is a disease that won't take you away unless you decide to do it yourself. This is a destructive disease that is hidden by shame, stigma, embarrassment, fear, isolation, whatever reasons that keeps it hidden. It's because we're afraid to admit to ourselves that we have a problem. Stand in front of the mirror, start telling yourself the truth, because in recovery, you will find a world of opportunities. You will find love. You will find feeling. And you will be able to move past this, but it has to start with you being honest with yourself. You can lie to everybody else around you, but be honest with yourself. Forgive yourself. Give yourself the opportunity to move forward. Stop looking back.
Great job. I really appreciate you coming on. Very proud of you for not just the recovery, but finding yourself as well and becoming the husband and father and person that you want to be. It's work. And it doesn't happen overnight. And it's a privilege to talk to you. And I appreciate you sharing your story. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Greg. Thanks, Dan.
All right, Dan, as always, great job. Appreciate you. And we'll do this again next week, yeah?
Sounds great, man. Have a great week.
I'd be good. We got Joe Beningo up next. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And thank you for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.